Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, November the 14th. If you're watching me or listening to me here in North Texas today, then you know what's happening around here. We're getting quite a storm. Cold. It's not a storm so much. That's probably not correct. But we're getting a lot of rain, and it's very cold rain. So I think winter is finally here and giving us the first taste of winter. Of course, the other thing around here, happening around here, is what always happens when the Cowboys lose, particularly when they lose in overtime. There's always a lot of second-guessing and a lot of stuff going on, and people around here are not happy whenever the Cowboys lose. And today, they have good reason to be unhappy because the Cowboys, I think by all accounts, blew a game up in Green Bay. I think they could have won that game easily, but they didn't. But there's something about the Packers and Aaron Rodgers. Whenever they play the Cowboys, it seems like it brings out the best in him, and it certainly did yesterday. So congratulations to the Packers. They played a great game. Well, the Cowboys, not so well. Let's talk a little bit about politics, because I want to share with you some numbers and some information that is pretty interesting about what happened last Tuesday. But let me begin by telling you about a post that I have over at the American Thinker today, talking about why the Republicans did so well in Texas and maybe some of the lessons that the party could learn for its opportunities outside of Texas. It is amazing to me that Texas, Florida, Ohio, Georgia, four big states, four of the top 10 states, all had red waves of one way or another. You had four very successful governors elected or reelected in Florida, in Texas, in Georgia, and in Ohio. These are four well-respected governors who are doing a heck of a job. They're running their states in a very efficient way, very productive way. And the citizens of those states rewarded them with real election in huge numbers. In Florida, I think it's 20 points. Here in Texas, 14 points. Up in Ohio, similar numbers. In Georgia, maybe less than 10. But nevertheless, a good reelection for Brian Kemp in Georgia. So the point of my article is that when you see governors who are doing a good job and they're performing for their states and their economies are growing and people are generally happy in the state, that's going to result in a wave, and in this case, a red wave. So another thing, too, speaking specifically of Texas, is that I think that the Texas Republican Party has done a very good job of realizing that they need Hispanic support, and no one has done that better than Governor Abbott. And the Republican Party has focused a great deal in developing ties with the Hispanic community, and it's paying off. It's paying off. When you see the growth of the GOP here in Texas among Hispanics, it's doing quite well. So there's a lesson here. There's a lesson from what happened in Texas and Florida and Georgia and Ohio. And the lesson is that if you're a successful governor, you can be reelected, and you can bring a lot of your own party along with you, as Governor Abbott and Governor DeSantis did here in Texas. So check out my article. It's over at the American Thinker, and it's called What We Can Learn from Texas. What We Can Learn from Texas. That's the name of the article. You know, if you're like me, I'm sure you're just as puzzled as what happened last Tuesday in the midterms. Because if you're like me, you were expecting a big Republican night. Why? Because everybody was saying that. People smarter than me, smarter than you probably, smarter than me for sure, were out there telling us that we were going to get this big wave that was going to hit the country. We were going to be winning 40 seats in the House. By the way, I said 35, not 40, but that's okay. And we were going to be winning 3-4 seats. Some people were even saying 6 seats in the Senate. Most of the experts had it down to 3. So what happened? What happened? How did we get from those expectations to the reality that right now the Democrats depending on what happens in Georgia, the Democrats are either going to be 51-49 or we're back to 50-50. And depending on all these recounts that they're having over at here and there and everywhere, it looks like the Republicans are going to win the House. And they will have around 220, 219, something like that. So how did that happen? How did all these expectations come down to reality? Well, obviously, it all comes down to who voted and how many votes they got. But, you know, over at the Power Line is a great blog that there's three attorneys in Minneapolis, and they've run this blog for quite some time. And it's a truly phenomenal blog. I check it every day. And they always have a lot of very thoughtful and useful information about politics and lots of other things as well. Well, they ran an article on Sunday talking about what they thought were some positive things that came out of this election. And I want to share some of them with you because I think they are important to know. The first one is there was, in fact, a Republican wave. More Republicans voted in this election than ever before, and they outnumbered Democrats by 4 or 5 points. So why didn't that translate into more wins? Well, because a lot of it has to do where people voted, like Texas or Florida, and also in terms of the House, because of gerrymandering, frankly, there aren't that many districts that are competitive anymore. But so clearly more Republicans voted. So the idea that Republicans didn't vote or they stayed home, that's not true. They actually turned out to vote, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing. That's something to build on as we look to the future. The other one, and this is fascinating to me. This one is fascinating to me. If you break down the electorate by age group, the Republicans won every age group over 30. So every group over 30, 30 to 40, 40 to 50, 50 to 60, 60 plus, the Republicans won each and every one of those groups. What they lost was the under 30 group. And why did that happen? Well, one big reason why it happened is because the Democrats put out this idea that they could cancel your student loan. If you remember this executive order that President Biden signed, you know, saying we're going to cancel part of your loan or whatever. And that was a real turning point. That was a real issue that got many young people out to vote, many of them maybe with college loans or whatever. So they were able to go into the universities and to some of the more recent graduates and really get the vote out. And they did. They got the vote out. No question about it. Many of those, you know, senatorial elections that were so close but went Democrat, it was probably the young people who made that happen by turning out in huge numbers. Now, of course, it was a very cynical thing by President Biden and the Democrats because they had to know. They had to know when they signed that executive order that it was going to be shut down by a judge. They had to know that. Come on. They're not stupid. They had to know that the President of the United States cannot just cancel loans. They had to know that. But nevertheless, they went ahead and did it. They went ahead and did it. And that got the young people out to vote. But now, of course, they're going to have to tell young people that that particular executive order is not going to fly. So I wonder how a lot of those young people are going to feel. Another group that the Democrats were able to motivate to get out to vote was women, particularly with respect to abortion. There were many, many women who were basically casting a protest vote against the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And I can understand that. That's fine. You know, you can do that. You can cast your vote that way. But the reality is that many of these women were living in blue states where there's been no impact whatsoever on Roe v. Wade. I mean, if you live in California, New York, Illinois, and Oregon, Washington, some of these, some of these blue states, there's been no difference between what was like before Roe and what is now in place because many of those states have come up with their own state version of Roe v. Wade. So again, many of those women were told, get out and vote. This is going to be a significant vote. But in fact, it wasn't. It wasn't because there's nothing that can be done to stop or to, you know, change the overturning of Roe v. Wade. I mean, there's only one thing that can overturn the Dobbs decision that overturned Roe v. Wade. And that is for the Congress and for the Senate and for the President to sign an amendment to the U.S. Constitution that says that you as a woman have the right to have an abortion. Unless they're willing to do that and then send it to the states for ratification, unless they're willing to do that and put such a, you know, such an amendment in the U.S. Constitution, there's nothing that anybody can do at the federal level. They can be done at the state level. You know, that many states have legalized abortion, and that's fine. But it cannot be done at the federal level. But yet, the Democrats, I thought, were very effective politically on the abortion issue and on the college loan issue. But at the same time, they were being very effective politically. They were being very cynical because they had to know that those particular votes were not going to be able to change anything. So that's, you know, that was good politics for them, but it was not anything other than that. The other thing, of course, that they mention is that Republican governors had a great day. I mean, just about every Republican governor was reelected, and that's a good thing, because that shows that people who are governing correctly are going to be able to stick around. So was it a good day? No. Was it a bad day? Not exactly bad either, because here's to me the most interesting part of all of this. When you sort of stand back now, you know, it's been a week, so we've had a chance to digest all of this. We could, if Herschel Walker can win Georgia, we're right back at 50-50, which is where we were when we started. We were at 50-50 when we started. If Herschel Walker can win Florida, that's where we're going to end up, 50-50. But we're probably going to have the House, because it looks more and more likely that the House of Representatives will go Republican by a very tiny margin, maybe single digits, but it will go Republican, which means, of course, that the committees will be chaired by the Republican Party. The majority or the chairman of the committees will be a Republican, and that's going to change a little bit the directions of investigations and other things. Also, if you control the House, then that pretty much is the end of President Biden's agenda, because he's not going to get anything done. I thought it was interesting, one last thought here. I thought it was interesting that President Biden got a question when he's overseas right now, and he got a question about Roe v. Wade or codifying Roe, and he said, we don't have the votes to do that. No, they don't. They don't have the votes to codify Roe. They don't. They know it. But they knew that before this campaign. And nevertheless, they went out there and told a bunch of women to vote on abortion. So I don't know. I don't know how a lot of those people are going to feel after they realize that they were used in a very cynical way by the Democrats. I wonder how they're going to feel. I don't know. I really don't know. So anyway, we could find ourselves in a situation here in the next 30 days where we have a small majority in the House and we have a 50-50 Senate. Now, which one of those two chambers can do more? 50-50 House, Senate, it's difficult to do. But a House with a small majority can start investigations because they've got the majority. It doesn't matter if it's one or if it's five, they've got the majority. So we may, you know, we may not feel so bad. It all comes down, I guess, to Herschel Walker right now. We got to get Herschel over the line just to save a 50-50 Senate. Interesting times, to say the least, that we are living right now. Well, I leave you with this thing. Back in 1861, that's a long time ago. That would be 161 years ago. Moby Dick, the novel, was published. And, you know, that became, I know we had to read that book in high school. That was one of those books you had to read, I guess, at least in my English class. But I always thought that was a pretty good movie as well. A lot of times the movie is not that good, but I thought in this particular case, the Moby Dick movie ended up being a pretty good one. I'm trying to remember who was in that movie. I think it was Burt Lancaster, but I thought that was a pretty good movie. As I say, sometimes the book is better, but in this case, the movie wasn't that bad. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.